This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And you may have heard about a major corruption trial in the news lately involving a former public official who once held his political party in an iron grip, but who left office in 2021. I'm talking, of course, about a case involving former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Madigan is not actually on trial. Not yet. That's scheduled for next year. But four associates are. They're accused of participating in a scheme on behalf of electric utility ComEd to effectively bribe the former speaker by giving do-nothing jobs to Madigan's allies in exchange for legislation favorable to the company. It's a complicated white-collar case, so I'm glad to be joined by two of the reporters who've been covering the trial in the Dirksen Federal Courthouse in Chicago. Dave McKinney covers state government and politics for public radio station WBEZ. Dave, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Brian, thanks for having me.
And Hannah Meisel covers state government and politics for Capital News Illinois, a wire service that feeds newspapers and radio stations across the state. Hannah, always good to talk with you, too.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Brian.
Listeners, because Hannah and Dave are busy in the courtroom as we are going to air today, we taped this conversation yesterday evening, Tuesday evening, after they had another long day in the courtroom. So we're not taking calls live, but as ever, you can let us know what you thought about our show by leaving a voicemail at 217-300-2121. Okay, Dave, I'm going to start with you. And this is really the first in-depth conversation we've had about this case on the show. Briefly, what is this case about?
Well, I mean, it all revolves around alleged bribery involving four former ComEd executives and lobbyists. The government is claiming that these four conspired to help advance ComEd's legislative agenda in Springfield by offering a litany of no work contracts and jobs and campaign contributions, arguably, to Speaker Madigan, former Speaker Madigan. And there has been an avalanche of evidence that federal prosecutors have been putting before jurors to explain that, built around largely what they say will be more than 100 taped recordings of the principals in this case. We're talking about the former CEO of ComEd, Ann Promajori, once one of the most powerful women, if not the most powerful business leader, female business leader in Illinois. John Hooker, a longtime lobbyist for ComEd, a former in-house lobbyist for them. Michael McLean, a lobbyist in Springfield for decades and close confidant of former House Speaker Madigan. And then Jay Doherty, who was known in Chicago as head of the City Club of Chicago, which was a public affairs forum that met once a month at the Maggiano's, and governors and Donald Trump and Madigan himself spoke in front of that group. He's a former lobbyist for ComEd as well. So those are the four principals that are involved here.
And Hannah Meisel, the speaker has been charged in a racketeering case that is separate from this one. He's not on trial now. Just to be clear, though, there's not allegations that people sort of handed him a sack of cash, right? He didn't personally financially benefit from this. What are the allegations? How did this benefit him?
In myriad ways. Basically, prosecutors allege that ComEd was kind of the tool for which Madigan could use to reward his allies with jobs and contracts. Like Dave said, you know, we've seen, gosh, a whole host of examples through recordings and especially lots and lots and lots of emails showing through McLean, who had been his longtime friend, confidant. They knew each other going back to the 1970s when they were both young members of the Illinois House. Madigan would go through McLean to ask people in his ward in Chicago, the Southwest side, 13th ward, so-and-so is looking for a job. Here's this resume. We're passing it on. McLean would go to executives at ComEd. Most often we're hearing Fidel Marquez, who was the government star cooperating witness in the case. He was on the stand for 5 days straight, and he was done on Monday, but we heard 21 hours, many, many, many emails in which McLean asked Marquez, please find a job for this person. The undertone, which was explicitly said actually a lot because Marquez was not doing things at the speed at which Madigan and McLean would have wanted him to, you know, get this done quickly, quickly and favorably. So the speaker could use ComEd. Of course, it's a regulated monopoly, basically, as most utilities are. It has a lot of cash because people, ratepayers, have kind of no choice to but to pay to have electricity. So it is this solid thing, a huge employer, 6,000 plus employees in the Chicago area. And it was basically a place to stash people. And it was kind of amazing, the range of jobs that we've heard about, everything from low-level meter readers, interns, all the way up to contracts for legal work and lobbying worth thousands and thousands of dollars.
Dave, this is former Speaker Madigan, famously got his start working on the back of a garbage truck, right? Like, this is a ward job a couple generations ago. You could just give your political workers city jobs. Is that basically what the allegations are here? This is a new form of that sort of patronage?
Well, yeah. I mean, in one of the tapes, McLean called it that, basically old-fashioned patronage. McLean talked about a situation where, you know, the committeeman in a ward might get an audience with the utility company, and the utility company would say, hey, we got seven jobs for meter readers. You, as committeeman, get to pick four of them. And that was just the rule forever. And of course, you know, what we have to remember here as well, from 2011 to 2019, that's the period of time that this alleged bribery went on. And during that period of time, ComEd scored some major legislative wins. I mean, starting in 2011 with what was commonly called the Smart Grid Plan. And that you know, basically was a modernization of the grid and meant that all of the, you know, roughly 4 million households and businesses in the Chicago area and Northern Illinois got new meters. And so it made it, they were digital. And so you didn't need meter readers that much anymore. So that went out the window. And then what came with that was a change in rate making. That was the most valuable thing to the company because, you know, they basically were guaranteed a profit. And that wasn't always a guarantee before then. And then there was a follow-up in 2016 called the Future Energy Jobs Act. And it was this thing that brought ComEd together with the Citizens Utility Board and environmentalists and Republicans and Democrats were in tandem. It was, you know, we were in the throes of the budget impasse years under Bruce Rauner. And yet this was one piece of legislation that Rauner and Madigan could agree upon. And it passed. And in testimony at the trial here, there's a ComEd executive, one of their top financial people, who said FEJA, as it's known, yielded a $1.8 billion windfall for ComEd. So you can see that this legislation that happened along the way was quite lucrative for ComEd. But what we've seen in a lot of the evidence that the prosecutors have laid out is how, you know, in the midst of these negotiations, McLean, the ComEd lobbyist, would be brought in to internal House Democratic discussions. Madigan would bring him in. He was the contact for Madigan on a lot of these decisions. And, you know, they would have these kind of sensitive internal discussions about who are we going to sub out of committees? How are we going to get the bills through committees? Who's going to be absent from roll calls? What are you hearing? What are we hearing? And, you know, it's a position that probably any normal lobbyist would covet, because who doesn't want to have that inside information before it becomes public? But, you know, what this all boils down to is whether or not what McLean did, what ComEd did, constituted legal lobbying. The defense lawyers in this case contend that it was legal lobbying. But what we know from history is that in July of 2020, ComEd entered into a deferred prosecution agreement in which the company acknowledged having engaged in bribery during this period of time, but as a condition of setting that charge aside, they agreed to cooperate with U.S. prosecutors for 3 years and pay $200 million in restitution. So, you know, we know that there were serious things going on at the company, and the company felt liabilities to agree to that.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation on the trial that some are calling the ComEd 4 officials, former officials, and top lobbyists for Commonwealth Edison, the electric utility in Chicago and Northern Illinois, accused of effectively bribing former House Speaker Michael Madigan in order to get legislation favorable to the company through the Illinois General Assembly. When we come back, we're going to hear some of the wiretap recordings played for jurors at this trial. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about a trial that has been taking place for several weeks now in Chicago, in the federal courthouse there. It is four officials and lobbyists, top officials and lobbyists of ComEd, who are accused of effectively bribing House Speaker Michael Madigan by rewarding his allies with jobs everywhere from meter reader up to legal contracts worth a lot of money over time. We're talking about this with two reporters who have been covering the ins and outs of the case. Hannah Meisel is with Capital News Illinois. Dave McKinney is with WBEZ, the public radio station in Chicago. In order to make our schedules meet, they are busy in the courthouse as we are going to air today on Wednesday. We spoke yesterday evening, Tuesday night, after they had covered another day of the trial. And Hannah, I want to play some tape now that we heard in this case. There were a series of wiretap recordings. We heard the name Fidel Marquez. Maybe we should just briefly remind listeners, who is Fidel Marquez? What role is he playing in this trial?
Right. So Fidel Marquez was, from 2012 onward, the senior vice president of external affairs. That just basically means the top lobbyist for the company. And he was approached in early 2019 by two FBI agents. And that morning, 6 a.m., spent 2 hours with them and immediately agreed to cooperate in the investigation. And for the last 4+ years, he's been a cooperating witness in this case in hopes to get no prison time.
It strikes me that this trial really seems to hinge on five meetings that took place over about 4 weeks in February and March of 2019. Obviously, there's a lot more to that, but these were some of the key wire recordings that we've heard, at least in my read of this case. Correct me if you have a different perspective, but let's listen to a little bit. This is a February 11th, 2019 conversation. I think it's a phone call between Mike McClain, the confidant to House Speaker Michael Madigan, and John Hooker, who was the longtime one of the top lobbyists for ComEd. Dave, can you set up what are we going to hear here? What are they talking about? What is the dilemma they're facing at this time?
Well, this is at a stage where they are kind of worried about a change in leadership at ComEd. There's a new CEO coming in. Pram Ajori had just been elevated into a new position with the parent company of ComEd, Exelon. And the new person on the job coming in was a former federal prosecutor named Joe Dominguez. And McClain, Hooker, and Fidel Marquez, they were all talking about, well, how is the new guy going to respond to this arrangement where these no-work subcontractors, precinct captains, for example, in the Madigan 13th Ward political operation, how they were getting paid, you know, basically $4,000 and $5,000 a month to do no work. How was he going to deal with that? And so they were all sitting around talking about, well, how do we approach this meeting we're going to have with this guy to explain this situation?
So how did you make out with Fidel when he came to talking about Doherty? Hey, Doherty, I'm going to wait till I saw you.
Well, I just told him to be transparent with
Joe.
I mean, just like Joe, you told, I said to Fidel, you may not be able to say this. You may be able to say that. Just like you ended up telling Fidel you had to hire Liz Brown because Mike Harrigan came to you. We had to hire these guys because Mike Madigan came to us. This is that simple.
That's how simple it is.
That's how simple it is. So if you want to make it a federal court suit, okay, but that's how simple it is.
Right. And this was the best way to do it. This avenue is one of the best avenues.
Right.
It's clean for all of us.
Right.
You know?
Right. We don't have to worry about whether or not, I'm just making this up, whether like Mike Zalewski Sr. is doing any work or not. That's up to Jay Doherty to prove that.
That's right.
We're not monitoring his workload, whether or not Mike Zalewski is earning his $5,000 a month. That's up to Jay Doherty.
That's right.
That's why we set it up like this, John.
We came up with this plan, and between him, our friend, and Tim, and the Alderman, they thought it was great.
Yep. Well, yeah. You and I came up with it.
I
they
know.
Didn't come up with that. You and I came up.
No,
with
we
it.
Came up with it, but they thought it was great once they
oh,
heard
yeah.
it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. Yep.
Dave. Seems like somebody wanted to make it a federal court suit there, yeah.
Irony of ironies, right? You know, at the very first part of that clip, they're talking about Jay Doherty. So these subcontractors were all being handled, many of them were being handled through a very kind of secretive arrangement in which ComEd was paying Jay Doherty money to lobby the city and county. But at the same time, Madigan and McLean were steering these people over to Doherty to be paid as subcontractors. So ComEd would pay a little extra money. That money would, you know, then be funneled through Doherty to these people. And I think what's so striking here is that, you know, they're trying to figure out how is Joe Dominguez going to react to this. And you know, we heard another reference in there, Brian, to Liz Brown and you know, comparing this to that. Liz Brown Reeves is a Springfield lobbyist. She has ties to the former Illinois AFL-CIO president, Michael Carrigan. And Carrigan helped win Liz Brown Reeves a lobbying job at Exelon. And McLean, in that tape you just played, is saying, well, look, this is no different than the kind of favors that Madigan is asking of ComEd with these job and contracting jobs.
And I guess the it will be up to the jury to decide whether there's a difference there, right? Because one is a government official, one is a former union president. Maybe that's what one of the key questions here. That trial is coming up separately. Let's look at the big picture here. So, Hannah Meisel, this is obviously Michael Madigan is not, as we said earlier, is not on trial. He has been accused of wrongdoing, separate from this particular case, but in the same scheme. What are the potential consequences for him out of this trial?
Well, this trial really is kind of a test case, a bellwether for that that trial, in which both, like you said, Madigan and Mike McLean, they're both accused. They were charged together last March, and then in a superseding indictment, I think that was filed in October, they're accused of a couple more things involving telecommunications giant AT&T, so kind of another utility there, to a smaller degree. Now, in that racketeering case, a lot of the things that we had already known from this ComEd alleged bribery scheme were kind of repackaged, but it also brought in some more things, other things that we had already known about Madigan's property tax law firm, and how that worked. And, you know, it was all repackaged into this thing that the government calls the enterprise in this, again, racketeering case. But definitely this case that we are in the middle of now, the success of the government's case against Madigan definitely hinges a lot on what happens in this courtroom in the next month or so.
Dave, I think back to I've been watching the state legislature for about 20 years now. It was just kind of known that legislation got held up so that the utilities would have to, you know, give political contributions and things like that. The utility legislation was often slow walked. There's a sense where, I don't know, I'm sure there are people out there, as you said, the defense here is, well, this was normal government lobbying. This is the normal course of business. How do you think about that? Having observed state government for even longer than I have, some of this seems like it was just kind of known and accepted. Is this a prosecutor, you know, making something criminal, something that had been politics in the past, or how do you think about that?
Well, I think anybody who has been around any of this utility legislation, it's not simple. It's some of the most dense legislation out there. A rank and file legislator without help from their research staffs and lobbyists are not going to understand what any of the terms in the bills mean. And so they're kind of at the mercy of leaders to kind of interpret what this is and give a thumbs up or thumbs down. And so, you have that kind of working at it here. And it's also extremely lucrative, as I mentioned. I mean, it's a, it means billions of dollars for the utility company. Now, I think the broader question is like, what constitutes a bribe? I mean, we've had, any of us who have covered Illinois politics know that you also have to kind of specialize in criminal justice because that's where a lot of political careers wind up veering off toward. And, I have to say, being in the Dirksen Federal Building again, I mean, the last time I was there was for the Blagojevich trial, and I covered other trials there too, kind of as an adjunct of covering Springfield. But that building, Dirksen, has a way of humbling people who go into it. And I think these folks on trial are experiencing that. The bigger question, though, about what constitutes a bribe, though, I think really is in play here because, in 2016, there was a big U.S. Supreme Court case involving the former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell. And it was a similar kind of bribery case where the Supreme Court ruled that, in spite of a lower court's conviction, they gave great latitude to politicians to basically take gifts, to take campaign contributions, and to not have that be an illegal act. And so I think that's the tightrope that these prosecutors are having to walk right now here in Chicago to basically demonstrate that this was a deliberate effort on the part of ComEd to basically more or less let the Madigan operation own this publicly traded company in a way that they could dictate who it hired and who it didn't. And in exchange, ComEd would get favorable treatment of legislation that was really important to it. And I have to say that on Tuesday, we've been kind of wowed, I think all of us covering the trials, wowed by the nearly 80 recordings that we have heard so far out of more than 100 that are expected to be played by the prosecution. But on Tuesday, prosecutors brought a series of FBI agents to the stand, and it started out as fairly dry testimony, but it involved their accounts of a series of raids that were made in May of 2019 in the homes of these subcontractors and of McClain. And with McClain, what was fascinating was that we were basically, 10 or 12 FBI agents swarm the house. They take photos of the inside. So here we are in court being given this visual tour kind of the McClain house and the basement office and file cabinets everywhere. And they get to the point in testimony where the FBI agent talks about what they found in two tote bags in the trunk of McClain's car. And there were a series of documents. McClain was old school because he would print things out, I guess. He didn't want to leave it on his phone or whatever, but printed stuff out. And one of the things that was printed out, actually was handwritten on a piece of hotel stationery. It was called the Magic Lobbyist List. And prosecutors today showed for the first time all of the Springfield lobbyists, more than, roughly two dozen of them, all from the Madigan orbit, who were on this list. And it evolved over time, and it was a list that Madigan and McClain formulated, it where an interest would come to Springfield with business to tend to. These lobbyists that were sort of favored in the Madigan world would get that business. And then the other part of it, there was another document where McClain was outlining all of the things that he was doing. He called them assignments for the speaker. After he retired from lobbying in 2016, he went to work for the speaker, and then he had a consulting gig with ComEd. But it outlined these things he was doing, and one of the things was talking about managing these no-work subcontractors. So it was really kind of an acknowledgement that he was, directly involved in and knew about the fact that these precinct captains were on the dole here and doing nothing for it.
What's the expected timeline for the rest of the trial?
Well, they started out saying this was going to be about an eight-week trial. So, I mean, I think there's every expectation this will go to the end of April, and it might even bleed into the month of May.
Wow. And of course, the speaker's trial is set to begin April 1st, 2024. I hope we can come back to you to talk more about this as it develops. Dave McKinney of WBEZ and Hannah Meisel from Capital News, Illinois, thanks so much for making time for us Tuesday evening at the end of what I'm sure was a very long day.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for our show today. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're looking at three universities at which the faculty either is or is considering going on strike: Chicago State, Governor State, and Eastern Illinois University. We'll talk about the issues there. Plus, tornadoes seem to be getting worse. The link to climate change is still being debated, but it does seem that tornado season is getting longer, and the area of peak danger in the country could be shifting from the Plain States to the Midwest. That is tomorrow on the 21st show. We'd love to hear what you thought about today's program or any of our recent discussions. You can always let us know what you think by leaving a voicemail at 217-300-2121, 217-300-2121. If you can't take that down right now, don't worry. You can always go to our website at 21stshow.org, and there you can find that number, our email address, every other way to contact us. We may share your responses on a future program. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our interns are Owen Henderson and Anaya Jones. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.